Good evening, one and all. Halfway through another week, I know, and it's halfway through, well, over halfway through February, yeah? Time just whizzes by, I tell you. And the older you get, the quicker it goes. As I said before, life's like a toilet roll. The older it gets, the quicker you get through it. And it is just like that. But we are here, and so is my guest. Now, one of the things, when I first came to America and the sort of stuff that really stuck out in comparison to England, was the fact that Americans seemed incapable of walking, that if they went to the mall, they had to get back in their car to go from one side of the mall to the other side of the mall. And I know when my mother came home to visit, she sort of went and took my son when he was very young down to the park in the pram, and it's about a mile odd, and she started chatting to a lady at the traffic lights ready to cross the road, and was, oh my goodness, you've walked that far? Well, this could explain a lot. Of course, the fact that there's no such thing as public transport in America as well doesn't help. But because a lot of people, you know, the gyms are one of the top six things that, along with coffee places and medical places and stuff like that there is, of course, in every town in America. And also, though, it does encourage people to do a bit more on the walking, with all the beautiful nature that there is out there. And people are discovering that during the lockdown, and even before the lockdown, you know, more and more people are sort of getting out into the outdoors and doing this exercise, seeing the beauty of the land that there is out there, well, especially perhaps once you retire and looking for something to do, something to pass the time of day. And I was just chatting to my guest, and we're talking about how there isn't a time of day anymore, because you end up doing more when you retire than beforehand. Anyway, I better introduce my guest today, haven't I? Because on the show today, I have the one and only Reg Spittle. Hi, Reg, how are you doing?
Hello, Barry. I'm doing very well. And you?
I am fair to middling. Tomorrow I reach my sell by date. So, I'm not sure what I'm going to do after that. So we'll see how it goes after that. But yeah, I am good. And, I could hear you chuckling in the background as I was doing the introduction there. So obviously you must have understood some of the points I was making there. But you've sort of come from, well, you're retired now, but political science professor and long-time newspaper journalist. Well, that explains a bit of the writing and everything like that. But what, you know, you gave up with the politics and everything like that. What started you on this passion for distance trekking?
A movie, Barry. A movie. It was Martin Sheen's movie, The Way, which is... you know, depicts his journey on the Camino de Santiago, a pilgrimage hundreds of years old across Spain. And my wife and I watched it one evening, and we got done, and I thought it was an okay movie. It was nice. He did a great job and all that. And my wife, I asked her what she thought of it, and she didn't answer right away. And I thought, uh-oh, something's going on. She leaned forward and put her elbows on her, you know, knees and said, we should do it.
There you go.
Are you kidding? We can't do that. And that was my position for months. For a number of reasons, I had no interest in walking the Camino, but she convinced me, and that got us to Spain, and it's led now to six distance treks.
Wow! Because it's funny you get that. It's like you get the thing, I want to do such and such a thing before I reach this old. Or I remember when I was in my 40s, I said, I want to do a London marathon before I get to 50. And I ended up doing four of them, three of them in fancy dress costume and stuff like that. And then I wanted to do this, and I wanted, it's like a bucket list, you know. I wanted to be a wedding singer. And because I do sing, I do karaoke, and I used to host shows and stuff like that. But a friend of mine got married, and he asked me if I'd do the music and stuff like that. And so I did the music. Of course, it's the same system for the karaoke as it is for the music sort of thing. So I said, well, do you mind if I give you and your wife a present? I'd like to sing you a song. And he gave me a look, and he said, We know you can sing. We trust you. And so when they had their first dance as a sort of second dance or the end dance sort of thing, I sang, Eric Clapton's Wonderful Tonight for him. And oh, I said, tick, yeah. Wedding Singer. That's it. I've done it. But it's like, but it's interesting how you thought about it and your wife wanted to do it and then you were hesitant about that. Now, is that the sort of professional male thinking? Oh no, this could be sort of something, it's knee jerk reaction. I'm not sure if I could really do this. Was that it, or were you just, you don't know where it came from, but you wanted to do it?
Yeah, well, first of all, my wife has most of the good ideas in our family.
I've got a wife like that called Susan as well. So yeah.
she made me promise to say that.
Right.
No, seriously, though, when I turned 60, it was funny because I became of age at the end of the 60s, the 1960s.
Right.
And then when I turned 60, I realized that, number one, as much as I loved working and teaching political science, I was lucky enough to be able to retire, and I was going to do it. Because the rebel inside me that hit me when I was 18 came back like a locomotive.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to do something different. I had to do something adventurous. I had no idea what it was when I was 60. Mm-hmm. And it took a while to figure it out, and I just stumbled into it, really, and that's what it came from, this feeling that I have.
I am nodding my head like anything here, because I am exactly the same. I hit 70 tomorrow, and I'm doing more now. I mean, I've done the shows, and I've done TV shows and stuff in the past, and narrated and written books and this sort of thing. And now I do a lot of buying and selling and flea markets, and I'm here, there, and everywhere. People say, "Oh, crikey, you're never around. What are you doing?" Well, it's like you're cramming. You know, it's like you want to prove that you can still do stuff, and you're trying to cram it all in because you know it's running. Yep. Your clock's running down, sort of thing.
Exactly, Barry. Yep.
So, going to Spain for a start. I mean, had you been to Spain before? I mean, was this totally a new thing for you?
Yes, Spain was a new country for us, and trekking was a new adventure, and sleeping in co-ed dorms, using co-ed bathrooms.
Oh yes.
I thought it was ridiculous, the idea of carrying a backpack for 500 miles across Spain. That was absurd.
Right.
No way I could do that. So there were a lot of things about it that were ridiculous in my mind. Even when I arrived in Spain, I was still shaking my head. Am I really going to do this? And then the surprises started happening.
Right, because this first walk was in your first book, Camino Sunrise. Is that what that's about? Walking with my shadows?
Yes. Yes.
Because that, I mean, that's a... It's a very old pilgrimage, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's been around, 800 to 1,000 years.
Right.
Millions and millions have walked it. Up to 250,000 arrive in San Diego each year, even now. More this year because it's a holy year.
Right.
They extended the holy year. But so it's the most popular distance trek in the world. And there's nothing like it.
And did it surprise you how much you enjoyed it? I mean, it must have been a bit, you must have done some smaller ones before, obviously, but it must have been a bit daunting, strange country. You know, this isn't just your Sunday afternoon walk. We've got to stay in places. We've got to travel with foreign people and stuff like that. Did it surprise you? Go ahead.
Yeah. You're literally living out of a backpack, which we've done on all our adventures. And on that one, the first night we were in a co-ed dorm. And because of things that had happened in my childhood, and that comes out in the book, and that's the title is Camino Sunrise, Walking with My Shadows.
Right.
It's a memoir. And things surfaced that I didn't expect. And I loved the dorm, the co-ed bathroom didn't bother me at all.
Right.
That surprised me very much. And the camaraderie around the pilgrim meal was a surprise as well. And we met friends that we have to this day. And the next year we visited them in Europe. That's how close we became on the Camino.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and it is, it's surprising. People don't realize. I think people are scared about a lot of stuff like that. I mean, I used to go to France a lot, and you know, everything. Yeah. So you get the woman sitting inside the door taking your money, you know, in the sort of outskirts of Paris and stuff like that. And it's, you know, you get a rough restaurant, and all it is a hole in the floor with two footsteps either side. it's surprising. But, and the thing is, you get used to it. You know, it's like everything. You don't worry about it. You know, nobody else is worried about it. Why should you?
No. And, you know, I've always, especially since we've been doing this trekking, I've come to learn that the most memorable experiences are the hardest.
Yeah.
And in the moment, they're not always fun.
Oh, no.
When you get done, you say, I love that I've done that.
Exactly. The memories. Yeah.
Yeah, the memories. I was able to sleep in the dorm with, you know, changing in front of all these people.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me. And I think we've taken, you know, you're nervous at the beginning, and within a day or two, if you're in France or Spain or whatever country, you wonder, why was I nervous about that? And that's because of the people.
Yeah.
The people make you feel at home.
Yeah.
And that's where you are.
They're not worried about you, so why should you be worried about it? I mean, it's like when I was, you know, I played rugby for 40 years and all sorts of sports and stuff like that. When I first started, it was a communal bath everybody was in. And of course, then it all got politically correct, and it then became the individual showers, you know, and stuff like that. But it's, as you say, you know, you make friends there, and nobody else is worried, so why should you sort of worry? But yeah, just the thought of getting changed and stuff like that, you know, going back to the old days of having to put on the beach, having to put a towel around you to change your swimming trunks, or your mother holding a towel and stuff like that.
And you know, that's part of what bonds you to each other on a journey like this, is that you're all doing this together.
Right.
And you see each other on the trail during the day and the next day around the dinner table. And that bonds you like no other experience I've never done.
And obviously, you know, from what you were saying, it gave you a chance. And I know when I used to do the practice runs and stuff like that, you're running, you're getting a sort of like automatic pilot sort of thing. And your mind's working other things. I used to write a lot of my short stories in my head whilst doing like a five mile run. And in your case, it's, you know, it gives you time to reflect, perhaps, you know, on stuff. Yeah.
And on all the treks that's happened, but on the Camino, I reflected on, I had a very difficult childhood, and I reflected on it walking, and it was cathartic.
I
came to so many great realizations. They weren't easy, but I write about them in Camino Sunrise.
Right.
So you're right. It's a journey. It's an inward journey as much as it is a walking journey. All distance treks are that way.
But, and of course, it didn't actually put you off, because you then became hooked by these treks and done quite a few more since then.
Done five others. And after each trek, we come home and they talk about trekkers who do like the Pacific Crest Trail, which takes 6 months, write about how they come home and they're depressed and they miss the trail and they don't know what to do with their
life.
That's right. And that, even on these treks where we're gone for 4 or 5 weeks, every trek I miss it terribly, and I'm missing it now. Our trek that we did last year, I miss it terribly. I would go back and do it again tomorrow.
And you've done a couple in Britain. You did the, I guess it's Land's End, the southwest, Cornwall, Devon, up to, does that go up to Wales? Is that the one that goes all along the front, the side there?
No, it starts right across from southern Wales, though.
Right.
In Minehead, England.
Yeah, in Minehead. Okay, yeah, yep.
And that's where we started, and we walked to Land's End.
Oh, you did you did it from the top down, not from the bottom up. Okay.
Right. And the trail continues actually along the southern coast of England, 630 miles. So we did we did a little over the first third.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's some beautiful, I mean, the Icknield Way and the Chilterns, and then, of course, you go out to Scotland, and, you know, and, of course, the ultimate, what everybody does, is the Land's End to John O'Groats, from the bottom tip of Cornwall to the top tip of Scotland there. So,
when we walked the West Highland Way in Scotland, we met people who were doing that trek.
Yeah.
They were going from the south to north or north to south. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to go north to south. It's downhill that way.
Yeah, sure. No,
I mean, that was the sort of, you know, the charity run that, yeah, sure, people did and stuff like that. It's always been that sort of thing. So what other places have you done the walks then?
Well, we did the Tour de Mont Blanc.
We started in
Chamonix, France, and walked around the tallest mountain in Western Europe, that being Mont Blanc.
Mont Blanc, yeah.
Into Italy, Switzerland, and then back to France. And then we walked another pilgrimage in Italy, which was wonderful, very rustic, very remote. We started in Tuscany and walked east and then down through the Umbrian Mountains, through Assisi, honoring, and it's the path that St. Francis
took. Yes, of course it was. Yes, it must be, yeah.
Right. And then we walked to Vatican City.
Oh, right.
Which was such a magical ending after walking for a month, honoring such a great man. To walk in. And then we walked, the Southwest Coast Path in England. And then this last year, I had my British passport. Yeah. So I couldn't go to Britain.
Right. Tell me about it. Yes. Tell me about it. Yeah. I did get there eventually, but I got there at totally the wrong time when they had the issue with all the lack of gas and stuff like that. So, I spent several days trying to get a COVID test but at least I got there to see my mother. So that was, the important thing.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good.
You also did the one through Sierra Nevada, didn't you?
Well, yes. And so last year we couldn't go to Europe again. So here again, my wife had this idea that we could walk the John Muir Trail, which is a wilderness trail through the High Sierras.
Yeah.
Including Mount Whitney. And we ended in Yosemite. So now that trail, you've got to live in a tent. And I thought my son Chris had told me, you have to do this John Muir Trail, Dad. And I said, I can't live in a tent. I can't live without a running water. Yeah, you can. Well, he was right. My wife was right. And we did that. And, it was 30 days in a tent without running water through some of the most spectacular scenery I've ever seen.
Right.
And most of it above 10,000 feet elevation.
I was going to say, it's pretty high up there, yeah.
There were passes we went over at 13,000 feet.
Oh, crikey.
I summited Mount Whitney, which I'm very proud of.
That wow.
Wonderful. And it turned out, I have to put an asterisk by it, though, because we did have mules carrying most of our...
That's an asterisk job, that is. But, I'd have thought... You know, just the fact of water, there must be, there obviously, it's marked where there is water and stuff like that, these routes and that, but you've most likely got to filter it, haven't you?
Yes, we filtered water, several times a day.
Right.
Yes, there's streams, there's lakes, there's ponds, there's little dribbles of water that you find, and you're always looking for water and you filter every drop.
So this, I'm guessing this last one might be your next book, because the second book is your Scottish trek and your Mont Blanc trek, isn't it? And your Italy trek.
Yes, it has four treks in it.
Right.
The first book was the Camino, and yes, I'm starting notes on the John Muir Trail trek. Yes. Now I'm still deciding whether to do another book, but that's not an unusual feeling after you just put a book out.
Right, because I know, I was just trying to think of the other trek that we did part of, and that was the Pennine Way. So I remember doing a part of that, because that's meant to be a very nice trek as well. But where I come from, just the north of London, we got the Chilterns and the start of the sort of Icknield Way and stuff like that along there. I remember there's a place called Ivinghoe Beacon, just at the start of the Chilterns, and you're walking along the Icknield Way, that path of it, and I was driving over that it can't be a mountain, it's only about 900 foot, yeah, but compared to England it's a bit of a hill, right? And Ivinghoe Beacon it's called. Anyway, I was going along there, along the Icknield Way to I was going up to Aylesbury to meet somebody in Aylesbury, and I've days when I was riding a scooter, you know, a Lambretta sort of thing. Anyway, I'm driving over this thing, and it's this sort of evening, sort of, you know, a bit dark and that. And you know, you pass something, and you think, did I just see what I thought I saw? You know, you sort of pull in and turn around, and sure enough, there was this Roman legion disappearing. Yeah, just disappearing into the sort of ether there. I got to the pub where I was meeting my mate at, and I said, oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe what I just seen. And the barman, you know, chatting to him and the barman, I said, I just passed this Roman legion. And they said, oh, Helen, we see them all the time. It's a bit of a shock when you see them. Oh, but yeah, so yeah, that's a nice trek. I mean, it's chalk as well, which is not so bad for your feet as the granite in the southwest there. But
right.
Okay, so, you know, you've obviously got it with the writing experience that you've got. You know, it was something that you wanted to share with people. What response have you received?
You know, that just wonderful response. You know, the Camino book has been out for more than 3 years, and it continues to draw new readers every day, from at least 10 different countries. So I love when I hear from people who maybe my inner story resonated with them.
Yeah.
They want to do the Camino, they can't do it, but they're doing it vicariously through my
right.
book.
Yes.
Or they're about to do the Camino and my book got them even more excited about it. So, and many other stories. I love hearing that. And I've heard the success of that book has surpassed my expectations.
That's great. So
I write for my sons.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to have...
Well, to be able to share with them, you know, your experience, obviously, yeah.
Exactly. And but I had no idea it would go well beyond that. So
right.
The new book is, you know, it's just out a few months. I'll know it's successful when it surpasses Camino Sunrise in daily new readers.
Right.
So it's working hard to get there.
Good.
So we're getting there, and I've heard some good things and nice notes and all that. I love that. I love when people write and approach.
Oh, crikey, yeah.
That's how I got the idea to write a book, is I wrote to an author, an English author, as a matter of fact, named George Mahood. And he's a bit like, he's England's Bill Bryson.
Yeah.
That's how I describe him. But I wrote to him how much I loved his books, and he read about our Camino blog posts, and he wrote to me and said, you should write a book.
There you go. And
so that was it. I credit George Mahood with getting me off the starting block.
But going back to what you said about people from other countries, it is amazing. I remember I had my book of short romance stories came out, and I had a lady from Japan wrote to me wanting to know if she could translate some of the stories into from China, not Japan, because she wanted to know if she could translate some of the short stories into China and share them with her people, you know, where she worked or in college or something like that. And I thought, oh my God, my book's been translated into Chinese now. That's my excuse. Okay, it is amazing. So, what's your next trek being planned?
You know, I don't know. Right now, we're about to start on a 4-month cross country journey in our small trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as trekking, I think we'll do some day walks, lots of day walks on that, mm-hmm. on that journey. But as far as a distance trek, I hope it's probably going to be 2023, and I'm hoping it'll be somewhere in Europe. I want to go there and spend at least 6 months and do several treks.
Oh, good, good. That's great.
Anyway, we have a list so long that I don't have time to get them all done, like you were referring to earlier.
Right, right. Well, at least you managed time to you know, share some of your experiences on the show, which has been great, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But time is beating us, so what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, Reg, so that you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your books.
Thank you, Barry. Folks, my two books are Camino Sunrise, Walking with My Shadows, and Tripping Through My 60s, When Adventure Calls, The Trails of Europe Answer. Probably the best way to find them if you're looking on Amazon would be to just my name, Reginald Spittle, S-P-I-T-T-L-E. And the e-books and paperbacks are available there. And my paperback is available at other sites, including the infamous Powell's Bookstore of Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Website. Pardon me?
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And then I have a website, regspittle.com. It's called Books in My Backpack. I'm on Facebook. I'm the Trek author on Instagram. And I'd love to hear from you. So whether you read my books or not, I'd love to hear from you if you have questions about trekking or treks, or if you have a story to tell, I'd love to hear it. And I'd like to give credit to my wife, who is chief editor, and she illustrates the books.
Oh, really? Nice. Nice.
With her watercolors. She's fantastic, and she's an inspiration every day.
There you go. Well, Reg, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. I've really appreciated it, and I've really enjoyed it. So thank you so much. And good luck with this new book. And perhaps when the third one comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
Oh, I'd love that, Barry. Thanks so much, and best wishes to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye,
well,
Barry.
There you go. My guest today, Reg Spittle. And as he said, you can find him on regspittle.com. A couple of great books there, really enjoyable. And it's just amazing, you know, once you sort of try, you're a bit reluctant to do it, once you try and do it, once you make your mind up. Like we said, you know, it's cramming, your final years. Let's get out. Let's see this magnificent world we've got before us and everything like that. Anyway, that's it for now. I'll be back on Sunday with my two music shows. First off, between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern. We have Those Were the Days. And being February, being my birthday month, February is Barry's Pick. So no themes, just some of my favorite bits of music for this month. And after that, between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern, here on New Visions Radio, we have the Swinging 60s. Music from the 60s, from not just the British Invasion, but from around the world. And then, of course, next week, next Tuesday, I'll be back with a fresh guest. But until then, of course, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...